Welcome to Songwriter Trists, an intimate podcast that interviews artists about the art of songwriting and find out more about the life behind the songs. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee, your host for this show. Music saved my life, and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. For more information on this podcast and the guests, visit songwritertrists.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Saqib. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Thanks for coming on here and letting me and the audience get to know you a little bit more, because you have such a beautiful voice. I was blown away when I heard you. I think I saw it on Instagram first, actually. So I'm really excited to hear more about how that voice and you came about and decided to start sharing it with the world. In your own words, can you start by sharing a little bit about who you are and where you come from?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you. My voice is what has encouraged me to continue to get my writing out there. I'm very proud of the songs that I've released in the last, year or so. If the songs were crap, then we wouldn't be able to, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But thank you. My name is Saqib. I'm from the U.S. I live in New Jersey, born and raised, raised in New Jersey, born in New York. So I've been on the East Coast of the United States for all of my life. My parents emigrated here from Pakistan in the early 1980s. So
nice.
I consider myself an American, but I have Pakistani heritage. So Pakistani American, so to speak. If we want to get right into it. Yeah. So I've started writing. I started writing, when I was a kid. I consider myself a kid, I was 14, 15 years old, writing songs, recording them on my, really, low end Logitech PC mic. So it's one of those old microphones that connect to the microphone port on the PC. It's like one of those skinny ones. It's meant for like conference calling and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, I would use that to record into a software that I downloaded illegally and that wasn't even that great on my PC. That was really in my family PC, my home PC, that was not that great. So,
So
I started my journey back then and, on and off been writing, and I've been singing, most of my life.
So what made you go when you were younger? What made you make that jump between, singing in the shower to, hey, I should record this? Like, what happened there?
I think it was encouragement. I got encouragement from my sisters, all three of my sisters. I have three older sisters. I'm the youngest of four.
Oh, you're the baby.
I am. I'm the baby. And, as the baby, I was subject to a lot of experiments around, they wanted to use me as their doll and their entertainment. Baby doll. Yeah, baby doll is and for entertainment. So when I was very young, 3 or 4 years old, I guess I may have had an inclination towards performing and singing. So my oldest sister, she would encourage that, and she put me in front of a television, and she gave me my dad's round hairbrush as my microphone. From a very early age, I would be mimicking some of the best artists of all time just by watching them on the television. And so I guess I had a knack for it as well. Not just that I enjoyed it, but I was even at that age, I was okay at it. And I received encouragement from my oldest sister. And then in high school, I received encouragement from my other sisters as well, saying, hey, you should audition for this, this musical that we're having at the school. She was 3 years my elder, and she was very much into drama. We came from we lived in a very small town, so it was a small school. Not a lot of people doing music, not a lot of talented people out there. So she encouraged me to give it a shot. So once I auditioned for that musical, it was my love for performance that's where it really all started.
Remember the first day that I saw you, 17 years old, just dancing like a fool. Cause I made you smile then, can I make you smile now?
Do you remember when you wrote your first song?
I do. I was, I think my first song that I can call my first song, I wrote when I was 14, possibly 15 years old. It was, I had a crush on this girl in high school, and she, flirted with me like crazy,
Girls like to do that.
Yeah, they do. And you know, it wasn't just me she was flirting with. She was flirting with a lot of, we should start a support group actually, because there was a lot of guys who were victimized by this girl. So she liked to talk to a lot of guys and flirt with them, and
she liked attention.
She did. She loved it. She craved it. And I had strong feelings for her. So she hurt me, because I think I'd asked her out. Like, I think that the only way she had hurt me is that I had asked her out once, and I'd like gained the courage to, approach her and try to take this to the next level, hand holding on a date.
Zone.
Right.
Yeah.
And she, completely blew me off. So, I was just so discouraged, but I turned to music, and that's what I've always done. I've always turned to music when it comes to matters of the heart. So whether it's heartbreak or, being in love or, being torn, it's music has always been my outlet.
Yeah. And like Phases, that's the name, isn't it, of the song that you put out recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really quite sad. It's beautiful, but kind of sad and sobering. Where did that one come from?
Well, the idea wasn't entirely mine. So it was a co-write with Mayella. Mayella is the artist who's on the track. She's just got amazing... not just an amazing pen, but a great voice as well. And we had connected via Instagram, and we just happened to come across each other. So we connected. We decided, let's work together. And a few weeks later, she had sent me this demo that she was working on, and it was Phases, and that's what it turned into. She actually. When she sent me the song, she wrote a little bit of the first line. So the cold-blooded, how my part goes. Like, cold-blooded, blood my whole heart with your loving. So she wrote that first line, and I just ran with it, And she had the chorus laid out as well. We're going through phases. I wish I could stay, but my feelings are changing. I'm cold.
Cold-blooded. Flood my whole heart with your loving. Find me in the thick of it, swimming towards something that I've wanted for so long. Never even I needed you this much, but some part of me thinks you've given.
Yeah. So I love her perspective on it, and then I just added my perspective as well. On the other side of things, that I'm trying. You just give me all the love you got, and I'm there. I'm going for it.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's what happens when you get two artists coming together and creating something, is the mixture of the two influences coming together, and you create a little song baby. It's the best.
Yeah, no, different perspectives. That's I've done more co-writes in the last year than I ever have. And just gaining perspective of other people. It's almost like having a conversation with that person while you're writing the song together, especially if you're in the same room. With Pause This Moment, that's a song I released in March. I wrote that song with one of my best friends, and he's an amazing songwriter. And he and I see eye to eye on a lot of things, but on some things we have different perspectives, especially when it comes to the relationship side of things.
Yeah,
He's been very good about keeping that. I tend to write right from a perspective of being at fault. A lot of my songs are, I take the blame for a lot of what goes on in my relationship. So with Pause This Moment, he really helped me, you know, get out of that and say, hey, listen, this is not just on you. It's not really your fault all the time. You know, why does it always have to be your fault? Sometimes it's, sometimes it's someone else's fault. So,
yeah, it's very, uncommon, I think, for people to accept some blame or responsibility, really. And it is good for people to take responsibility for yourself because, you know, once you're an adult, that's what you have to do. But not everyone does it.
Right. And I may do it a little bit too much, you know. I take all the responsibility sometimes.
Yeah. I can be really triggered when people start blaming me for things. And I think because I'm triggered when people blame me for stuff, I don't like blaming other people for things either. You know, and so it's a funny thing. It's like the reality is, though, someone told me once, if you think about how hard it is to change yourself, what makes you think that it's even possible to try and change anyone else?
Oh, right. Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So it's like what value comes out of blaming someone else is like they're not, you know, unless they have that perspective like yourself to be self-responsible, they're not going to change, and you blaming them for something isn't going to really help. It's probably just going to piss them off.
Yeah. You know, and I think the key word there is blaming. You know, there's a way to tell someone that they've wronged you in a way without making them feel guilty about it. You know, it's just, hey, this is what I feel you've done to me. And this is how I feel about it. But, you know, I don't want to end our relationship because of it. You know, I don't want to victimize you or put you in the doghouse because of it. This is just how I'm feeling about it. And it's just hoping at that point that they have the same self-awareness that they can take it in and understand where the other person is coming from. But that's a very mature stance, you know, like not a lot of people can have that type of mature conversation. It's very easy to get your nails dirty and say some really mean things when you're mad at somebody.
Oh, yeah. When we're angry, we're completely illogical. And we say things we don't mean and can really regret it later. And there's different relationship types. And we all deal with different relationships in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I've found in my experience that there's usually an avoider attached with like an aggressor. So one person just wants to, you know, run away from the relationship or the fight when something gets too hard. Mm-hmm. And the other person just wants to have it out, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty common. And relationships are hard work.
Indeed.
And it's one of those, are you in a relationship with someone at the moment?
I am. And we've been in a relationship for quite some time. We're going on, we just passed year 11. So.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's.
Got kids?
No kids. We've been up and down, on and off.
Okay.
But we've always had a close connection with each other, and we've always, it's a long-winded history. She and I, a lot of heartbreak there on both sides, but we're finally in a relatively good place, which is great. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with maturity. You know, we're both, we're not teenagers anymore. We're not even, you know, young adults anymore. We're adults. We're full on adults, and we handle things like adults. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Good on you for adulting.
Right. Hashtag adulting.
So was there a clear moment for you that tugged on your heartstrings, that was like the moment where you said, I want to do this as my career. I want to be a singer-songwriter. I want to share my music with the world.
Not a clear moment where I made that decision, but I had been wrestling with that idea for quite some time. So, you know, back in college, I really got my education by singing with others and performing with others. So I was in, I don't know if it's a big thing in Australia, but in especially large universities here, a lot of the universities have a cappella groups. So, you know, there's collegiate a cappella is a big deal here. There's competitions for collegiate a cappella. I mean, we go, there's that movie Pitch Perfect. Pitch Perfect is about that culture in the university. in the United States. So I was very much involved in that culture, and that was where I got my education with music. Mm. And then afterwards, you know, we had recorded a few albums. The group that I was in, Casual Harmony, which is, it's still around to this day, which is great. We had recorded three albums while I was there, and I was really, I've always been fascinated by the production side of things, you know? So, even as a kid, as I mentioned earlier, recording on a crappy PC with, a not great microphone, and not great illegal software, you know? So I've always been, you know, songwriting has always been a very technical process, and I loved bringing technology involved with it. So I learned a lot about recording music in college, and afterwards I tried pursuing a career as a producer, you know.
Okay, yeah.
But then I realized, you know, I don't come from I come from very modest means, you know. We've struggled a lot growing up, and you know, very paycheck to paycheck, so to speak. So I didn't have the financial security to do that, especially after college. And what I realized is that you need capital to start a business. So I decided to take a step back, and it was always the plan. The plan was always to come back to music. So I started a career doing something completely different.
What were you doing?
So I'm in, and I'm still doing this in a way.
Yeah.
So it's I have a career in financial technology. So it's
fancy.
Yeah, it's fancy, and it's again.
Sounds like it pays well.
You know, it
opposite music.
It's allowed me to get to this point where I can pursue music the way that I like to. The goal was always financial, some sort of financial freedom. Obviously, I'm not there. I'm not a financially free person. I'm still going to rely on some sort of financial backing, whether it's a job or. Mm-hmm. An investor or a record label to come in and help me grow this thing. But I learned at a very young age after trying and failing that you need capital in order to succeed any type of business. And the business I wanted to succeed in was music. So after I had worked and, you know, advanced in this career and got to a point where I was a lot more financially healthy than I was, you know, 10 years ago, I decided to, you know, I really made the choice. I went to Mecca with my family. And I, when I saw the Kaaba is this holy monument in Mecca. And it's the place where all Muslims are supposed to go eventually, you know, we're all supposed to, we're all, told that we're all supposed to make this pilgrimage. Now, granted, personally, I'm not a very religious person, but my parents are very religious, and it was always something that I've always wanted to do was bring them there because they had never gone. They had never had the means to go. So I finally got the chance to bring them there, and then when I saw the Kaaba for the first time, I said, you know, I closed my eyes and I told God or the spirit or something, whatever the energy was, I told them that I want to inspire people with my voice. So that, to me, that was three and a half years ago. To me, that's when I really made the conscious choice to pursue music. So that's
that is so cool.
It's a very long answer. Cool. So
no, that's okay. I mean, I grew up in a really religious family as well, but Christian, and there is that. It's asking, isn't it? The power of prayer, or, I mean, and there's loads of books out there and self-development stuff where they talk about asking or manifesting or whatever it is that you want to call it. I think it's all the same thing. It's really putting out there your hopes and dreams and actually allowing yourself to ask for it. And for a long time, I didn't believe in myself enough. I had some really horrible core beliefs about who I was as a person in this world. And, you know, I had very, very low self-worth. And when you don't believe in yourself and you have low self-worth, you don't even think to ask for things that are outside of that belief because it's not even an imagination of possibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You don't feel like you can do anything if you have no self-worth.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and why would you think that if you believe that you can't? So I think the fact that you did that and you actually asked for something that deep down, I think you probably know you were born to do and you were empowered to do, that was yourself telling yourself that you finally maybe start to believe that that's actually your purpose in life. And I think that's amazing.
Well, I'm glad you came to that conclusion. And I'm glad, you know, I think the world is a better place when more artists like yourself are writing music. You know, I think it's important to tell your story and tell your perspective and share that with
the world. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I wrote songs in my bedroom for a long time and I refused to share it with anyone because I was just too petrified. And the self-worth thing was there, you know?
We all go through that journey, I think. I don't think anyone wakes up like one day and, you know, I don't think anyone's first song is a good song. It can't be. It can't possibly be a good song.
It's not allowed to be. It's not fair.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Anyone, if your first song is a good song, then you're never writing a good song ever again. Because it's a process, right? You really have to learn how to write a song. And that takes time, takes study, self-study, in my case, it was self-study. But it takes a lot of repetition and a lot of bad songs before you get to start writing consistently good music. So
that's right. I have a podcast with Pat Patterson, and he's the professor of songwriting at Berklee College in Boston for music. And he's written a whole bunch of amazing books for songwriters. Mm. And he said that you need to write the 90% crap that you're going to write to get the better 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And that the more you write, the bigger and better and your songs are going to get. And he said, don't spend too much time on the song you've just written because your best song is still ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like don't get bogged down with something that's been done, finish it and then write the next one. You know, just keep going. So it's great advice. You're on par with him there, I think.
That's a good perspective as well. I very often never finish music. So I'll write a verse and a chorus for a song and then I won't come back to it. My track record is I'll never come back to it. But then, you know, every once in a while, there's been a couple of songs that I've written a verse and a chorus, and then 3 months later, I go back to it and I finish it. I need to follow his advice of just get it done.
Hold on to it, because I was like that when I was just writing by myself. I was like that. I had heaps of songs that were half finished, just a verse and a chorus, or like a hook or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to frustrate me that they weren't finished. But I had this one idea and I thought it was a song, but it just wasn't quite complete and I didn't know what was missing. And I took it to a co-write in Nashville last year and I played them what I had and they picked it up straight away and we finished it within 3 hours and now it's going to be on my next EP. And it's like I had that song sitting there half done for a good 5 or 6 years at least. You know, like it was just festering in the background, annoying the crap out of me because... You know, it wasn't finished, but I loved it, but it just wasn't a song yet. And so you never know when one of these half-finished songs that is sitting around, you know, somewhere is going to come up in a situation where it's like, all right, now it's time.
Mm-hmm. Now you can always recall that. That's true. That's a really good point. Thank you. Now I feel a lot better about my discography of half-finished music.
It comes down to, I guess you said you've been doing a lot of co-writing, but for me, that's where I've found like I'm good with the hooks and coming up with a chorus or maybe a little bit of a melody.
Mm-hmm.
But my weakness is lyrics. And so coming up with the story and the verses, I love co-writing with people who do that. Have you done much co-writing and what is your process when you go into a co-write? Because I know you've done phases and some stuff.
Yeah, so it depends. You know, prior to COVID, for a couple of months, I was doing a lot of co-writing. And mostly with friends. So there's a level of comfortability there already established. I think it's for me, it can be tough to write a good song with someone that I don't know, primarily because, especially if you're in the same room, primarily because there's still like a level of, you know, what do I not want to reveal to this person? Or what does this person not want to reveal to me? Like, there's, I think in order to have a successful co-write, a lot of barriers need to be broken. A lot of walls need to come down. And it's a hard to do that in a first time meeting someone. So, Pause This Moment is a great example of, you know, that's a co-write of someone I've known for a very long time. I've known, Jay Aaron for, I think it's been 13, 14 years now. He's one of my best friends and one of my closest confidants. So he knows every single aspect of me. So we were able to write a great song together because we're very, very comfortable and familiar with each other. You know, there's other scenarios where like, phases came about, and Myella just texted me we called and we talked to each other a little bit on the phone, and that was good because we got to get to know each other a little bit and get some of those veils down. You know, so with that, I was just so in love with the chorus and the melody that she had established. And, it was like right place, right time, because I was going through something in my personal relationship that I needed to get off my chest. So I was able to easily just lay something down, edit it up, and send it back. I think I sent her back the stems, two days after she sent me the demo or something. So we got that one done real fast, and we've just been sitting on it for 6 months.
6 months. Yeah. Wow. Don't you love that part of being an artist when you've written a song and it's ready to be released? Yeah. You kind of have to just wait.
Well, it depends, right? So Move Until You're Numb, that's the song that I had released prior to Phases. I released that in August. And I started writing that in July. So I heard the instrumental from Mixtape Soul. I came up with a melody immediately, and I was at my sister's house, like 3 hours away at the time, for Independence Day weekend in the States. So I came up with a melody when I was there, and then when I came home, I wrote the first verse and chorus that day, the day I got home, and then the next day I finished the song. So
you're really inspired with that one.
Really inspired by that song. I hadn't written a song in quite some time at that point. It had been like maybe 3 weeks since I wrote a song, which for me, that's a very long time, especially this year.
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning of the year, I was cranking out 3 or 4 songs a week. Whereas like, COVID really slowed things down for me for good reasons and bad reasons. But with Move Until You're Numb, I released that song as soon as I possibly could because I didn't want to keep that one. I wanted to get that. The world, I thought the world needed that ASAP. So I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I'm an independent artist. You know, the fact that I'm an independent, self-funded artist allows me to make those decisions. I can license an instrumental, record my vocals, get it properly mixed and mastered, and then put it out into the world. Huge benefit.
You have that control.
Yeah, that control is very important to me.
Just like the season of autumn and fall, it rains. See the forest for the trees and won't blossom my love by spring. Afternoon, daylight, cherish every minute of it. Am I right or wrong? Plans for tonight, sit down in the shower and talk about life. We just might work up an appetite. Let the playlist play till the song you like comes on.
For when people hear your music, what they might feel, or
you know, I think it's when it comes down to it, it's I hope they can use it for whatever reason, either to relate or to emote. You know, so a lot of my songs that I've released and that I've written, as I mentioned earlier, are more heartbreak songs. So if there's like a 16-year-old kid out there who is going through, you know, puberty and dealing with all those hormonal imbalances and falling in love and getting their heart broken for the first time, you know, my hope is that the songs that I write can help get them through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is such a hard time in everyone's life, you know, being a teenager and all the changes that go on, and then it can be so hard to navigate. And I think it is a time when we turn to things like music to try and make sense of the world. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to releasing more music and trying to make an impact. I feel like that's the only way I can make an impact is by releasing music. It's probably the best way. Maybe not the only way, but it's the best way. And it's the best way to reach a much larger group of people than I normally would.
Yeah, I'm fully with you on that. I think art and music is one of those things that people can listen to and they can either take it or leave it how it is. And it's not like you're not arguing with anyone, you know, you're not trying to make them change their beliefs or anything like that. You're just saying, this is me, this is a story, enjoy it or not enjoy it, whatever. And it's beautiful. What was the best advice that you've ever been given around songwriting?
I want to say the most recent best advice I was given was by my fellow collaborator, who I mentioned earlier, Jay Aaron. He told me to be more visual with my writing. You know, so instead of informing the listener of what's happening, instead of telling them that there's a fire, describe the fire. You know, that type of being more, showing more imagery with my writing. And that, I guess that was the next step for me. I didn't know. I thought I was, you know, I had reached my pinnacle of songwriting, and then I realized, oh, wait, no, there's a lot more work to be done. So it's been great. And you know, I think the songs that I've written after getting that advice have been amazing. So I'm very grateful for it.
We're constantly getting new information that is going to help us be better at what we do and connect with people better. And like you said, have emotions and feelings in a better way. And that's our job, you know?
And I think the key is the urge to continue to be a student of songwriting. I don't think I have gotten, I don't think I have stopped wanting to be a student. I've always wanted to be the best that I possibly can be writing songs and creating music. But I can see a future version of myself getting content with my abilities and, turning off the inquisitive mind.
I can't.
Yeah. And I got to remind myself not to do that, you know, and I think that's important for everyone who wants to learn something, anything.
Yeah.
It's lifelong. You know, the journey really is lifelong, to be a student and to learn as much as you possibly can.
We go through phases, don't we?
We sure do.
Okay. What about if someone came to you and said, hey, Zakib, I want to start writing my own songs. Where should I start? What advice would you give that person?
Well, if someone is coming to me and saying that they want to start writing their own songs and they haven't written a song yet, I would tell them to not do it, because it's got to come naturally, right? You can't ask for permission on how to write a song or ask someone how to do it. If you're asking someone how to do it, that means you're always going to be asking people how to do it. I really do. Maybe it's encouraging them to say, hey, yeah, you should do that. But that would be it. To me, it's like, all right, go figure it out. I figured it out. I'm not the brightest person in the world.
Google it.
Yeah. you could Google it, or you could just, you know, listen to your favorite artist and try to, you know, emulate that.
Yeah.
It's tough love there. For me, I
love that.
If a kid asks me, how do I write a song? I'm not going to tell them how to do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Give it a try and suck. Be really bad at it for a little while and have the urge to get better. And we'll see.
I don't think people necessarily need permission to write a song, but I think needing permission to not be perfect straight away.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing is, like, you know, Michael Jordan wasn't Michael Jordan the minute he touched a basketball. He worked his butt off to be the best basketball player of all time. Like he constantly, yeah. constantly worked. And he got cut from his high school team his freshman year of his first year of high school. He didn't make the basketball team. And that just, and,
crazy.
And yeah, so it's, and that's the best basketball player of all time, right? So it takes a lot of work. You're not going to be good for a very long time. Like there, yeah. you might be, right? There are people out there who are savants.
It's a very small percentage of people.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
There are the Jacob.
The rest of us have to work for it.
Yeah. There are the Jacob Colliers out there who can,
yeah.
you know, master every instrument by the age of 10 or whatever. But, you know, if that's you, you're not asking me how to write a song, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly.
I'm asking you how you did that, you know, so.
That's so true. And it is something that is probably not talked a lot about in the industry is that be prepared for people to not like your stuff.
Mm.
Like you are not, I mean, at any point, no one person is loved by everyone. Like not everybody loves, you know, Jesus. Not everybody loves Madonna. Not everybody loves like Elvis Presley. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The greatest people in the world still have people that like them and people that don't like
them. Yeah, they still have haters.
And yeah, there's still haters out there. And there is this kind of like sense, I know that in my culture, there's this sense for women especially to like please everybody.
Mm.
And like, if one person doesn't like it, it's the end of the world. It's like, actually, the only person who opinion matters is whether they like your songs or not is you.
Right.
And everyone else is just beauties in the eye of the beholder and they'll either like it or they don't. The only person that matters is whether you like it.
Amen.
That makes sense. Amen.
Amen. No, that's the most important, right? Like,
it is. Yeah.
I found myself catering to a certain type of song sometimes, because that's what is popular. So there's a certain sound that's popular, and I would want to try to emulate it, and I would hate it. Mm-hmm. So why? And then I realized, oh, you know, I shouldn't be doing this because I don't like it. If I don't like it, then
it's not authentic to you,
right?
Yeah.
Then no
and
one
like,
else
why would like, you? Yeah, imagine if you released a song you didn't like, and then it became like this hit song, and you had to sing that song every day for the rest
be
of your
torture.
Life. Like, oh, that'd be torture. Yeah, no one wants that. Yeah, so you want to make sure it's something that you love, and you can see yourself sharing for a very long time.
Absolutely,
Yeah. Cool. All right, last question for you.
Oh wow, and we're there already, fun, huh?
So thank you. We're there already.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
If you could co-write with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Dead would be Michael Jackson, and I think the reasons are obvious.
Are they? What are your reasons?
He, to me, is the best of all time.
Okay.
And, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit as a songwriter because he had a lot of co-writes and a lot of help from some of the best... also of all time, the best engineer of all time, Bruce Swedien, the best producer of all time and musical mastermind of all time in Quincy Jones, one of the best songwriters of all time in Rod Temperton, you know, so in the best, one of the best bands of all time in Toto, you know, so he had all of these great musicians and musical masterminds working with him. But so because of that, he doesn't get a lot of credit for his songwriting ability, but just to be not even... write a song with him, just to be a fly on the wall as he does his thing. Like I would just, hopefully when this life ends, there is a way to, for me to do that. My consciousness to go to 1983 or 1982 and go to California and be a fly on the wall in that studio.
That'd be cool. Oh.
Yeah.
You know what? That's kind of cool. A cool concept.
Let's
just time travel.
Who knows? Maybe that's what insects and animals are. Is
yeah.
Maybe it's
time traveling souls.
Us from our future, family from the future. Who knows? Who knows? You know, alive. It would be Max Martin. Yeah.
Okay.
Max Martin, I think is he's a pop genius, and I just want to be in a room with him and create, you know, pop songs that'll last 200 years.
Yeah. Well, let's just put that out into the ethosphere. You know, like we talked about asking. You've got to ask. It's where it starts.
I'm knocking on wood right now. Just yes, hoping it happens.
Look, I know for certain that he's a big fan of this podcast, so I'm sure he's listening. And
Max, if you're out there,
yeah,
just sock it.
Hit us up.
Hit me up.
Well, I'm going to put all of the ways that people can get in contact with you on our website, songwritertris.com.
Great.
And on all the descriptions of all the podcasts and all the apps that people are listening to this on. So if anyone wants to get in contact with you or follow you or listen to your music, they are going to be able to do that very easily.
Awesome.
I'll make sure that is my job to be able to do that and get you out there as much as possible.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would like to share or feel inspired to talk about before we finish?
No, unless you got something for me. It's election day today. So in the United States, so there's just,
how's that going?
Tensions are high. You know, a lot of people are uncertain. Nobody's really happy about either. We live in a duopoly, right? So it's either the Democratic candidate or the Republican candidate that's going to take the cake. Nobody's really excited about either of them. And people are worried about, you know, the weeks to come. And, there's that. And I'm trying to shut that out. And I'm very good at it. I'm very good at shutting the world out and not letting it get to me. But others close to me are not, you know, so.
Yeah. And that can be hard. Do you know what? There is so much uncertainty in the world at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it does raise the anxiety levels because we like to feel secure and comfortable. And that's a very natural part of being human. We want to know that we're surviving and that we're going to be okay and that we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's, as children, that's inherent. You know, we believe we're safe when we're with our parents. And if they tell us we're safe, then that's okay. And I think as adults, we kind of get that same sort of security from our government and from people who are in authority in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, we're in a situation that we know no one has any idea what's going on, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's where we have to have a bit of faith and just trust that whatever happens, it's going to be okay. We're always going to have everything we need. We just need to trust in each other, work together, and continue to love each other. And if we can just do that, we'll be fine. You know?
I love that. And I agree 100%.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I hope that helps you.
It does.
And anyone else who might be listening, if I keep that in there. But I think that we've talked about some cool stuff, and I'm really excited to see the development of your music and your work and what's coming out.
Thank you. Likewise.
Please keep me in the loop. One day we can do Sakib Part 2, Songwriter Trist, and just get the next part of your journey.
Sure.
And
and
you probably have more lessons ready to share with us all.
I hope so. I mean, I'm not in a position of authority. I've been doing this for a long time, and I intend on continuing to do this for the rest of my life. So, I look forward to having more conversations with you. Maybe next year when I release my album,
we
could talk about your EP. We could talk about my album just to,
Well, maybe we can write a song together one day.
I would love that. I would love that. I really would.
Yeah. No, I love your attitude, and, like I said at the beginning, you have a beautiful voice and you're very gifted.
Thank you.
And you should fully believe in yourself and go out there and share your gift with the world. And I'm looking forward to supporting you in that and watching you grow. So well done.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining our Songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com.